Welcome, everyone, to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and this is episode 66 of the Instructional Leadership Show, the fifth part in our Continuity Project series. And our focus today is on virtual hiring. How can we do hiring over the summer without the usual drawbacks, and knowing that it may be more challenging this summer to hire than it usually is given the circumstances? So our essential question for today is, how can we hire teachers to fill vacancies over the summer without missing out on valuable input and buy-in from other staff? See, I think too often what happens over the summer is that we get this notification from a teacher, oh, I'm retiring, or oh, I'm gonna take a leave this year, or you know, various reasons that people might choose to depart. And often we're caught off guard by that, right? Like, we didn't expect that we would have this summer vacancy. You know, we try to fill our vacancies much earlier in the process. But it seems like most schools, most of the time, do have some hiring to do over the summer. So this is a reality that, of course, we all are going to face at some point. Let me know in the comments, if you're joining us live, if you are facing this right now, or if you expect to face some summer hiring. Just let me know what you think, and I'll keep an eye on the comments as we go along here. So of course, when that happens, we do our best to adjust, to scramble, to get the position posted in a timely fashion, and hopefully get some good applications in. And then, of course, the next challenge becomes finding people to screen applications, right? It's not typically a good idea to do all of that yourself, to do all of that screening by yourself. So you want to get people providing input, ideally people who have something to do with the job itself, right? People in the same department, or people who would be on the same team, or who have a related expertise. You know, if you're hiring a special ed teacher, you want to have other special ed teachers do the screening or participate in the screening. And then, of course, you have to get an interview team together. So once you've screened those applications, figured out who you're going to interview, got to get your team together and get your candidates in. And of course, all of that is much more difficult in the middle of a pandemic. So what we're talking about today is how to do this all virtually, but not just do the same things virtually, but to do it better, to do everything better in that, in this kind of strange time that we're in. I think we have the opportunity to actually do some things better. One of the ways that I believe we can make the process better and more effective is to give ourselves better evidence that allows us to distinguish between large numbers of candidates who on paper may look fairly similar to one another. And if we take these steps that we're going to outline in today's episode of the Instructional Leadership Show, we'll find that we're actually able to be more inclusive and actually able to get input from a wider range of people. So let me know what you think in the comments here, and we will do our best to be inclusive in our discussion here. I'm going to go ahead and pull up the comments. So if you are leaving a comment, hopefully I will be able to see that here. And as always, if you're a member of the Instructional Leadership Show, you get the recording and you can leave comments on our website there. So let me know if my comment just showed up. Let me know if you're tuning in live. All right, so let's talk about our vision for the virtual hiring process. What should it look like when we do high quality virtual hiring? I want to give you three main objectives or three main characteristics that we want our hiring process to have. Number one, it needs to be efficient. And I think we often want things to be efficient, but we don't acknowledge that as an explicit value. I value efficiency in the hiring process because, you know, I've done teacher hiring where I had 130 applications for one position. I promise I am not going to spend an hour reading each of those applications very carefully. It needs to be an efficient process of finding the best people and interviewing them and then selecting the best candidate. Second, though, it needs to be inclusive. And often, inclusive processes are less efficient. So we have to really be smart here about how we include people so that it's not the kind of thing that just gets delayed and we postpone the meeting until everybody's available, but then we don't have a teacher in place by the time school starts. You know, we've really got to balance or manage that tension between efficiency and inclusivity in our process. And of course, we want that process to be evidence-based. And we're going to look at some ways today that you can have a much more evidence-based process than we typically do. All right, so what can we do? A couple of high points here around that evidence-driven aspect. First of all, I think we need to have clear criteria. Whenever we're hiring, we need to really whittle it down to a short list of criteria. What are we looking for in this position? I know for a fact that one of the jobs I got, my job as a head teacher before I was a principal, I got that job because one of the things they were looking for was someone who could help update their website. Kind of a silly, small thing. I probably wouldn't put that in the criteria, but I know it was something they had in mind because they specifically asked about it. They specifically talked about it when I mentioned that that was something I'd be interested in doing. And somebody will really jump out at you in a whole different way when you have those criteria in mind. So know what you're looking for, and it's okay to have some, you know, some disagreement about what those are and to maybe put some criteria out there for discussion and then realize, you know what, actually, you know, being able to redesign the website is not the most important thing we're looking for. We really need somebody with expertise in whatever. Have that discussion. We'll talk about how to do that in just a second. The second big idea here around evidence-driven hiring is that we really need to open it up for more people to have input. Now, not necessarily for more people to have sway over who gets hired, but to have input on what those criteria should be and who gets to interpret the evidence. I think the more transparent we can make that, the more clear we can make it what our evidence is, what our criteria are, and how a particular candidate aligns or does not align with those criteria based on the evidence, I believe we will end up with much better decisions and much better buy-in from staff. So the challenge, of course, is to get that buy-in, to get that input when people may be on vacation, when people may be unavailable to come in person. Maybe they're with their kids all summer and they're not free to just, you know, leave everybody behind and come into school. And of course, in the middle of a pandemic, we do not want to come into school. We want to do things remotely and virtually. So how can we make this happen? One of the things that, of course, we're doing synchronously is having meetings on Zoom. But I want to actually encourage you to not just take advantage of technology to avoid having to all be in the same place at the same time, but to actually avoid the need to gather at the same time, even virtually. What I mean by that is that we have an opportunity to allow people to give asynchronous input. They do not have to all be on the same Zoom call or Microsoft Teams or Google Meet or whatever you're using. People do not have to be available at exactly the same time in order to be involved in hiring. All we have to do is make the same participation structures available in an asynchronous format. And we're going to talk about how to do that today. So I'm going to give you four steps for, I think it's four, maybe I have three. I have at least three, maybe four. Yep, we have four. So let's get right into those four steps here. The first step is to get people's input. You want to, of course, let people know that there is a position to be filled, because often people don't know that. You might have just found out yourself. So share the situation, share what the vacancy is, and then ask for input on the criteria. You know, what are we looking for? We've got to hire a new chemistry teacher. We were not expecting our chemistry teacher to leave, but hey, here we are. So what are we looking for in that person? What are you looking for as a colleague? What are you looking for as a team member, a person who can contribute to the staff? What are you looking for in terms of a fit for the culture of your school and for the fit for the needs of your student population? And then ask for people to volunteer to participate in the process. Say, hey, you know, we really need to wrap this hiring up in the next 2 weeks. If you are available to screen applications between Sunday and Tuesday, let me know and I will send you a link. And that way we can give people a little bit of a flexible window to be involved asynchronously. So we're not saying interviews are Monday at 9 a.m. or screening is Monday at 9 a.m. You've got to be there or you can't participate. We're giving people a window of time when they can participate asynchronously and give their input that way. We also want to make a rubric based on those criteria that we come up with in the early stages of the process. Right now, there are probably some job description requirements already posted, but you really want to think about what your staff is going to consider as the criteria and turn those into a very, very simple rubric. This does not have to be detailed, does not have to be complicated in order to be useful. The clearer and more direct those criteria can be, the better. So what you might do is you might post a message for your staff saying, hey, we have a vacant chemistry position that we need to fill before school begins. I want to ask for your input since we're not going to be able to meet in person. And then you might give some dates and times when those different steps need to be completed by, like application screening. If you're just listening right now, you might take a look at my slides and you can see the text example on the screen here. So we've got a deadline for application screening, a time frame for live interviews, and then a time frame for reviewing interview videos. We'll talk about each of those steps in just a moment. And then I posted some discussion questions. What professional and interpersonal qualities would you like to see in a new colleague? What additional skills would make a candidate an especially valuable addition to our staff? What qualities should we look for in a new hire who can best meet the needs of our students? You ask people to reply. And I've said reply by Friday so we can move forward. And then people can actually reply on their own schedule and give you that input, and they can see what their colleagues are saying. Now, one of the elephants in the room when it comes to hiring is that often there is a preferred candidate. You know someone who will be applying. Maybe there's an internal candidate. Maybe you have an alumnus of the school who will be applying. Maybe you have a former student teacher who wants to come back and apply for that job. If you know the characteristics of that person that would make them an outstanding member of your staff, you can certainly kind of get people thinking in that direction. You know, we want somebody who has, you know, training in this particular thing that I know we sent them to a training on, or, you know, who has this particular characteristic. And you want that to be transparent because, if that's going to come up anyway in the hiring process, you might as well establish that from the beginning. You know, if you intend to kind of steer the process towards someone who you know would be a great fit, do that transparently. You know, say, we are looking for someone who has training in PBIS, or we are looking for someone who has this particular de-escalation skill, or who has experience writing this type of curriculum. You know, be explicit about those criteria up front rather than try to come up with less specific criteria and then make a poor case that the candidate that you have in mind is aligned to those. So hope that makes sense. The screenshots that I'm going to show you today are from SIBME, and we are hosting the Continuity Project entirely within the SIBME app. So I'm going to show you how to do this within SIBME. There are lots of other ways you could do it, but I think it makes a ton of sense to do it within SIBME. So what you see on screen here now is a discussion question, simply just like a forum post, and you can post a question. People can give nested replies, so you can keep your discussion organized. And also within SIBME, you can develop a rubric. And in your SIBME account, you can create a rubric using the rubric editor. And you can first specify performance levels, like, you know, unsatisfactory to excellent. And then you can specify criteria. And here I've listed presence, professionalism, content knowledge, and student focus as our criteria. And of each of those, we would rate on a 1 to 4 scale. You make up your own rubric. I would encourage you to keep this simple, but have those criteria in mind, make them clear. And then step 2 is to go ahead and gather the evidence you need to make an evidence-driven decision. Now, often we are asking only for written materials in the hiring process, and your district may have a fixed process where you can only ask for certain things as kind of the first stage of the hiring process, and then maybe later on in the hiring process, you can ask for additional things. I would recommend that as early as possible, you ask people to include some sort of video response, because, you know, when you're not going to meet this person in person prior to making a hiring decision, you know, using video just gives you a ton more context for kind of who this person is and what their presence is and how it's, you know, what it's like to interact with them. It would be completely different to only know them on paper prior to the interview. And you may want to actually use that sense of presence and how they come across and what their personality seems to be like as a screening criteria before interviews. And I want to emphasize that because often we don't ever get a sense of what someone is like personality-wise or temperament-wise on video until we've already made the decision to interview them or to not or we might have already left them out by the time we get to the video part of the process. So I want to encourage you to allow your candidates to upload video responses prior to you making your interview shortlist. You want to get that context, that evidence, as early as possible, and then get your staff involved in scoring those responses. You know, of course, you want to make, again, the criteria transparent. You want to have a rubric that everyone can see and everyone can agree is, you know, this is what we're looking for. And then score those videos that your candidates upload based on that rubric. Get people to watch those videos, to comment on them, to rate them, and to, based on those ratings, then make your shortlist for the interview. Within SIBMe, the way that you can do this is you can create an assessment huddle. This is where you would post the instructions for your candidates. Now, maybe you've already done some paper screening prior to this, and maybe you have a longer short list, so to speak, to kind of whittle it down from your huge number of applications down to a smaller number that you'll video screen and then, you know, do some live interviews over video from there. But as you can see on the screen here, I've got some instructions. Please upload the following to be considered for a full interview: a 1-minute video introducing yourself and explaining why you're interested in the position, a 5-minute sample mini lesson teaching a chemistry concept, your resume, your cover letter, and any letters of recommendation. Okay, so you send that invitation. You can see we've got an invitation interface here. You send that to each of your candidates. They do not see each other. They cannot see each other's materials. This particular interface was designed for teacher ed programs to allow students to submit their portfolios for their teaching credential. And it works great for hiring as well. So the candidate will get an interview or an invitation to sign in, to upload their materials, rather, and they can then upload video. They can record a video right in the SIBMe app. They can upload documents. They can add links if they already have things online. And then they can submit those to you for your team's review within the SIBMe interface. And they actually get a private workspace, so if they want to kind of crop things down, they can edit a video and then add it to the application and submit it. And then once that has been submitted, your team can review any documents, they can review the videos, and they can comment on them. And this is where having a rubric is really crucial, because you don't want your feedback to just be, oh, I like this person, or oh, I like that person. You want it to be criterion-based, right? You want there to be clear, established criteria for what's a good response and what's not a good response. And then when you have those criteria, you have the video evidence, you can actually comment on specific parts of the video. And you can see there's a timestamp here. Darina says, this is a great way to frame the purpose of the activity. So if we've got a sample lesson, we can have someone with expertise in that subject area leave comments that will help the rest of the interview team interpret what they're seeing, even if they don't personally, if I personally don't have the expertise in that content area, I might need help from my colleagues to really know if what I'm seeing is, is good and what's good about it. So that collaborative review of evidence can really make the process helpful and much more powerful. So you want people to provide rich evidence when they're applying, and you want your interview team to use that rich evidence and use your criteria to make an evidence-based decision. And then, of course, not only can we tag and timestamp those comments, but we can also apply a score at the end to decide who deserves to move on to the next stage of the process. So we want to have that kind of set up in advance. We want to think through what this process is going to look like. Step three is, of course, then to invite people for live interviews and conduct those interviews. But here's the thing about conducting live interviews. You don't actually need to limit the input provided in the process to the group of people who's available to participate in live interviews, right? You can have a small group of people ask your questions and, greet the candidate and chat with them and meet them and ask those interview questions and record the interview questions. But you can have a much larger and broader and more representative group of your staff review the answers to those interview questions. Because at least the way I have always done hiring for professional positions is we don't get real informal. We don't get real casual. There's not a lot of chit chat and back and forth and ad-libbed questions. every candidate is going to get the same questions and the same opportunity to answer them. So there's no reason that all of your people who are participating in scoring need to be on the interview live. And this is a huge insight for a lot of schools who have always done in-person interviews where if you're not in the room, you don't have any input. Well, now we have the opportunity, because we're conducting interviews virtually, to allow people who cannot be there live to give their input on their own schedule asynchronously. So the way you set this up is you set up one video conference room. If you're using Zoom, you just, you know, schedule a Zoom meeting, share that link with everybody, and you let all of your interview panel in, you know, the small group that's going to be asking the questions, but you only, of course, admit one candidate at a time, and then you remove them from the interview when their time is up, but you keep the Zoom room going. You keep the Zoom meeting going so that you don't have to send everybody a different link. Because if you have people getting signed out and then you have, you know, six different links for six different candidates and you've got six different people on the interview team, they're going to be scrambling. It's going to be disorganized. It's going to be chaos. So just do one Zoom room and keep, keep adding and removing people as their, as their interview starts and stops. Then you've got that recording, save that, upload it, and then you can do your asynchronous collaborative scoring. And the best way to do that is in a SIBMI collaboration huddle. So this is different from the place where the candidates are uploading their application materials. You make a new huddle. This is your interview input team, right? So I've called this chemistry position interviews. You invite your staff members to participate in this huddle. So the candidates are not in this huddle at all. You're just uploading their candidate evidence to that huddle. You can actually take one giant file and drag the sliders and say, okay, this is so-and-so's interview, or this is so-and-so's answer to question number one. SIBMI will allow you to crop out just that part of the video without destroying the original. And then you can get a separate file for each question or for each candidate. And then it's really easy for people to go through and watch all of those. You know, I think the shorter the chunk of video, the better for people who are scoring asynchronously, because they don't have to worry too much about being interrupted. They can easily pick up where they left off if your videos are short. And then, of course, again, people can leave timestamped comments. So if I want to see what a particular comment is referring to, I click on that comment, it plays that part of the video, I can hear the candidate's response, and I can interpret my colleague's comments and rating based on the same evidence. And if I have something to add, if I have a difference of opinion, I can reply right there with my own timestamped comment, and we can apply ratings. So we can end up with a score that allows us to choose our top candidate. And of course, we can do all of this through the mobile app as well. SIBMI has a terrific mobile app so that you do not have to be at your computer. You know, if you have people who are on the road, maybe they're taking a little vacation or camping trip or something, they can still give that input even if they're not at a computer. When we have all of this rich evidence and we have an inclusive process with transparent criteria, we can make a decision that is defensible, that had lots of people giving input, even if no one was available to go up to the school on a particular day at a particular time to do live interviews. We can really make this flexible and more inclusive and more evidence-based if we follow the process that we just talked about here on the Instructional Leadership Show. So if you have to do any hiring this summer, I want to encourage you to get asynchronous input, to not only do virtual interviews, but to set them up in such a way that you get participation and input from people even who were not available live to participate in hiring. You're going to make a better decision. You're going to have happier staff who, you know, feel more ownership over that hire and are more welcoming of their new colleague because they were included in the process. So that is it for episode 66 of the Instructional Leadership Show. If you would like a PDF version of this process, you can go to principalcenter.com/hiring-PDF to download a PDF with all the screenshots and everything. So if you missed anything from this week's show, just go to principalcenter.com/hiring-PDF to get a kind of a step-by-step process for setting this up in SIBMe. And that is also where we will be uploading this episode of the Instructional Leadership Show, along with all of our other continuity project trainings. You can log in at app.sibme.com. And if you have not already signed up and created an account, you can do that at principalcenter.com/continuity. Now, one special announcement that I want to make sure we don't forget here is that to help everyone with teacher hiring, we are doing a drawing after this Friday. So you have until this Friday to enter. I want to get as many great teacher interview questions in our discussion as we can. So we have a discussion in SIBMe, and I've created a shortcut at principalcenter.com/teacherq, all one word, T-E-A-C-H-E-R, the letter Q, principalcenter.com/teacherq. That will take you to SIBMe, and you can log in and participate in this discussion. And you can add your own favorite teacher interview questions. And if you have a whole document of questions, feel free to share those. Just paste them right into the discussion. Or if you just have one really good question that you want to share, as long as you share at least one question that hasn't already been shared, you are eligible for our $50 Amazon gift card drawing, and we will give that away over the weekend and announce it probably by Monday. And I would love to have your input there. So go to principalcenter.com/teacherq to participate in that discussion. And if you are not signed in to the Continuity Project yet, you can create your account at principalcenter.com/continuity. And we will also have, you'll also find a link there to our previous guide that we published earlier in the summer, the Virtual Faculty Meetings Guide. And we will also be uploading the hiring guide. You can get that at principalcenter.com/hiring-pdf. All right, that is it for today. This has been episode 66 of the Instructional Leadership Show. Thanks so much.